Marsha Madsen's a partner at Meyer Brown and former chair of the Services Acquisition Reform Act panel, the SARA panel. Marsha, thank you very much for being on the program as part of our special report on acquisition this week. I went back, as I mentioned before we got on the air, and read some reports, some news accounts of the wrap-up of the SARA panel. And I was struck by the points that you were discussing in your meetings with the terrific panel that you had back then that are very similar to the things that we're talking about today, competition and requirements and acquisition workforce. And a lot of these issues don't seem to have gone away in the meantime. And it doesn't sound in some cases like some of them have gotten any better, Marsha. Do you see progress in some of the areas that you and your colleagues reported on back then? Or are we stuck in the mud on some of these issues? Thank you for joining me today.
Oh, you're very welcome. And thanks for asking me. I always wondered how long it would take to do a retrospective on the SARA panel, so here we are. I think it's a mixed bag. You know, the SARA panel, among the other things we did, and if you've looked at that very long report, you'll see this. So we went back, obviously, and looked at the work that the other panels had done, the Commission on Government Procurement, the Section 800 panel. And there's a lot of commonality in the themes that these panels who have studied acquisition keep coming back to, and we talked about some of them too. We talked to a great extent about competition and about we were focused on services, but competition more generally. You know, we looked at some data, we pulled some data to the extent we could get it from FPDS, and looked at where are the gaps, where are the problems with competition, and some of those things I think have gotten better. I think that our panel did some good work on multiple award IDIQ contracts and on transparency for competition in those areas. But we still have some of the same issues that we talked about. Two of the things that strike me, actually, we had noted that there were many situations where the government, despite putting out a competitive RFP, got one offer. And if, for anyone who's read OSD's recent competition guidelines, you'll note that that's an increasing problem that they note and are paying attention to and trying to figure out why that is. And then we also talked at some length about requirements definition, and that is again something you'll see in the OSD competition guidelines, and that appears to be a really difficult issue for government. At the SARA panel, we invited some very large commercial buyers to come in and talk to us about how they structure their requirements, how they structure their competitions, how they manage to get fixed prices. And they pretty much all came back to a very basic issue, which was they spend time and money up front defining their requirements. That's what makes it possible for them to do effective competition and to use more fixed price contracting.
The connection between competition and requirements, I think, is interesting because I hear more and more from the vendor community that they have a sense, at least, whether it's true or not, that they look at an RFP and the requirements are written to a particular vendor. At the same time, we hear more and more complaints that there's less communication between the agencies and the vendor community than ever before. It doesn't seem like you could have one without the other, and yet both of these perceptions exist, which both kind of fly in the face of what your committee recommended back in 2006. What is your sense of where that stands today, that level of communication, and how did the conversations that you had with people outside the federal space about requirements give you some insight as to how agencies could do that better, writing their requirements such that they can still get what they need but encourage that competition more?
One of the things our panel talked about a fair amount, and particularly with, again, large private sector buyers, was market research, how they do market research, who they talk to, how much time they invest in it, how they structure their organization internally to make sure that they not only get the information, but that it gets to the places it needs to go. And I think the government continually struggles with those very same issues. You know, what do you do market research on the internet? Is that enough? Do you bring people in and talk to them? How much time do you spend with them? How far do you cast your net looking for new ideas? And then what do you do with all that information? Is it the user? Is it the acquisition organization? How do the two of them communicate? I think we see, and you know, I'm in private practice at this point, but we see in a lot of the things that our clients ask us to look at a disconnect between maybe what the acquisition community thinks and what the buyer, the ultimate user, the buyer thinks. So there's obviously some institutional issues that folks are struggling with. We also see maybe a little bit of a mixed bag in terms of government personnel being concerned about having conversations with industry. And I know that Frank Kendall, among others, has been a big advocate for, look, communication's fine, you know, talk to people, find out what's out there that helps you define your requirements. But there's a lot of hesitancy and anxiety. We have an awful lot of regulations, procurement integrity rules, revolving door rules, conflict of interest rules, and unless someone has mastered that framework, they may in fact be uncomfortable having conversations. So it's understandable. That doesn't mean it's not a problem that's worth addressing.
Marcia Madsen and Maya Brown was the chair of the Services Acquisition Reform Act panel. Mr. Kendall has already begun an initiative to look at all of the regulations that govern acquisition at the Pentagon. Is that a step in the right direction in your view? And what are the hopes that we can get more than just a regulatory review, that some of these can actually go away if it turns out they're not only not helping, but in some cases hurting either the innovation that the Pentagon's able to procure or driving costs up?
Well, I think, again, our panel, we tried to look at regulations in the areas that the statute asked us to examine to see if there were suggestions we could make, and we made a number of suggestions. But I think it's a terrific idea to do a regulatory review with the acquisition regulations periodically, say every 5 years or so, just to see what's out there because they accrete. There's more and more of them. So it's a great idea to do a review. I think probably we'll find that a lot of these regulatory provisions have folks who initially were quite interested in having them enacted and may still be interested in them. So I think, you know, how you address regulatory burdens may be a more complex question. But I was just going to observe that one thing I think is going to your theme, Francis, is unfinished issues in acquisition reform. We seem to have increasing regulatory burdens instead of fewer regulatory burdens, and that has an impact not only on the government as a buyer, but it also has an impact on industry and who will come forward to do business with the government and on the supply chain. And I was going to give you an example.
Please.
The Defense Authorization Act several years ago made a point of concern about counterfeit electronic parts, a very legitimate concern, something many in industry as well as government are concerned about and are trying to find solutions to. And then as the regulatory implementation of that legislation has evolved, we've had two rules in the past year. We have a counterfeit electronic parts rule and we have a reporting rule. The counterfeit electronic parts rule is a DFARS rule. The reporting rule is government-wide, and there's reporting in the counterfeit electronic parts rule too, but the part of the approach that these rules have adopted is in the interest of identifying counterfeits or suspected parts and in making information available so people can go check for themselves and check their own companies, is a reporting to a government industry data exchange where that information can be shared. At the same time that one's a proposed rule, the counterfeit electronic part DFARS rule is final. We've had the IG from DOD speak up and say, look, I understand that's what the reporting is. It's to this government data industry exchange. But if you have a counterfeit part issue or a suspect or a non-conforming part, I want you to come in and report to me under the contractor disclosure rule. And that, you combine a really complex regulatory scheme with the IG expressing interest in it as a potential procurement fraud problem, and you really change the balance in terms of the burden of that regulation.
How do you separate, though, the intentions from the execution? You said, and I correctly, that the counterfeit part regulation was it had the best of intentions. As you describe the execution of it, it sounds like it doesn't really get at the spirit of what Congress intended. How do we strike that balance in meeting the desires of Congress, in this case, for something that is legitimate, but do it in such a way that it makes sense for the vendor community that's supplying the government with these goods and services?
Well, it's a big project, and these are big rules, and I think people worked very hard on them. There's a lot of effort in the creation of these regulations. What I think makes the process work better when these regulations are being developed is something you said a few minutes ago, communication between government and industry. Bring people in, and they did this. They had hearings. Bring people in and talk to them. But before you go final, let everybody see what it is exactly you're going to propose so you can get sort of that last round of communication, and then be willing, if you're on the government side, as you see issues develop, be willing to adjust your regulation and be willing to address, is it working the way we anticipated it working? Because, as again, these are huge projects, and they're not easy to do, and nobody's going to get it right the first time.
Another issue that you and your colleagues looked at back then that is showing up a lot more now, again, it's a perception, at least in the vendor community. Dan Gordon argues very strongly this week that it's not the case, but the appearance, at least, of a lot more protests, at least on high-profile or high-dollar-value contracts. What does the remedy landscape for contractors that think something hasn't gone exactly right look like in your view now, Marcia?
Well, if you're talking about the formation process, obviously the protest process is the place where a contractor has at least an opportunity to air a concern. If you look at GAO statistics over the last 5 years, you're not going to see much of an increase in protests. I think there's an informal metric that you'll hear people talk about. You see about one protest for every $14 billion in spend. So I think you have to ask yourself, is that really an unreasonable oversight process? And you also have to think about, okay, what are the options? I'm going to change the topic of your question a little bit to talk about really the impact of oversight in the last 7 to 8 years. The budget increases for the IGs, the budget increases for folks at the Justice Department who investigate procurement fraud, the emphasis on, including on the Hill, on mandatory suspension and debarment. And when we have a regulatory scheme that we have the regulators who develop the FAR and the DFAR, and they have ideas about how they want the acquisition system to run, and then we have the oversight community. And they seem not to really talk to each other. So, who's making the acquisition decisions, really? Is it the folks who are on the buying side, or is it the folks who are on the compliance and enforcement side? And increasingly, I think it looks to many of us like it's the folks on the compliance and enforcement side who will take a regulation, analyze it in detail, and then decide that a contractor, or perhaps an agency for that matter, has not complied with it the way they think it should have been complied with. And that creates a real perturbation in the acquisition system.
Well, with all due respect to present company, Counselor, it seems like there are a lot of lawyers involved in the acquisition process. You have IGs, GAO, Justice Department, as you mentioned, at least in cases of alleged fraud. As you say, there are more people involved with the process, it sounds like, that aren't buyers, that aren't acquisition procurement people. than there probably have been at any time before. Is that a fair
observation? I think there are more folks involved on the compliance side who are, and because we have, since 2009, we've had the mandatory disclosure rule and the requirement to make disclosures if you have quote-unquote credible evidence of a false claim. And so that requires a structure in the companies. It requires a structure in the government. We have different kinds of, you know, some companies report every, you know, hour that they find that someone was shopping instead of doing their work, right?
Mm-hmm.
Some companies don't do that, but it's not really clear what the expectation is. So those reports have to go somewhere. You have bigger oversight staffs, and you have, you know, record recoveries under the False Claims Act that the Justice Department is reporting. And I think the question is, who's really looking at the big picture at, you know, how those regulations are being interpreted, what were they intended to do, and whose responsibility is it to make sure that the procurement regulations accomplish procurement acquisition objectives, and if they're not accomplishing those objectives, they're just being used to for enforcement purposes that may not always line up with the procurement objectives. Who's looking at that big picture? And I don't see anybody looking at that big picture.
This compliance culture that you talk about, Marcia, is it your sense that it is progressing on kind of an evolutionary exponential growth trajectory, or is it possible that this is a pendulum swing and that a series of actions could swing it more back toward the middle where some of these compliance folks that you're talking about get out of the equation and there is more emphasis on the acquisition and procurement side?
Well, I don't want to underrate the importance of compliance.
Sure.
Compliance is important. I think when you add the compliance emphasis to, you know, a lot of new rules that are also very complex, that's a burden for both the government workforce and the industry workforce to manage. And my question really was, who's looking at this overall in terms of how it affects the procurement system? How does it affect acquisition? Is this OFPP's job? Is this DOD's job? I mean, who's looking at it to see, have we got a system that makes sense, or has it just become so cumbersome in its implementation that people are unwilling to do business with the government, and it's just become too risky? Because you can't tell when someone's going to take an unreasonable interpretation of one of these regulations. And we see all the time differences between buying agencies and the compliance community on what their regulations mean.
As we finish up, Marcia, I'm very grateful for your time today. We'll go back to where we started at the beginning, and that's execution. There are two primary areas of execution that kind of have become a theme in the interviews that we've done for our special report this week. One of them is execution in Congress, where your panel, other organizations, various trade groups make recommendations all the time. There's a growing consensus for what should change. There doesn't seem to be much activity as far as the execution that's needed, at least for the where legislative remedies are required for Congress to do anything. FATAR has been stalled for a while now, and some other pieces of legislation are in holding patterns. The other is in the workforce within the agencies, and that is the regulatory changes that agencies or OFPP, OMB can make on their own. They're doing, and they're not always trickling down to the actual rank and file workforce level. Thoughts as we finish up about how each of those areas, each of those groups, organizations can work on their execution, improve their execution to improve the process overall?
Wow. If you looked at our panel's recommendations, we tried to do two things. We tried to do things that were practical and achievable. So some could be done through the regulatory process and were, and from the legislative process, I couldn't give you a count. If you're really interested, I could go check today. I couldn't do it off the top of my head. We had a fairly high level of implementation of our recommendations, and we were very proud of that. I think an intervening event from our perspective was, of course, the recession. I think there was some progress made, for example, on workforce issues after our panel finished right away in legislation in 2007, 2008, 2009. Senate Armed Services Committee, for example, did a lot of work in that area. But then we had the recession and we had sequestration, which I think has had a detrimental effect on the acquisition workforce. Coming back around in 2014 to look at those issues is probably a great idea to see, you know, what can we do for training for folks? What can we do, to let the government recruit people who are interested in this as a career and willing to tackle this, a kind of a career, and, you know, give them incentives and give them training? Because those things have kind of, I think, fallen by the wayside. I was talking to an agency acquisition official a couple of weeks ago who said that despite all the money and effort that the agency makes on recruiting people, they bring people in, they train them, but 5 years later they're gone. So that's a big challenge for government right now, and it probably needs new focus.